When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
And I say, hey, what a wonderful kind of day. If you could learn to work and play and get along with each other.
Welcome everybody to Wednesday Warriors, episode 17, no it's 18, goddamn, I have it in front of me, Liam, I have it in front of me, and I still said 17, it's episode 18, your favorite podcast hosted by an Irishman and an Australian man that talks about NXT and AEW. I haven't fact checked that. If there's another Wednesday Night Wars podcast hosted by an Irish and Australian person, we're doomed. But Liam, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I like how we completely threw away any like aura of professionalism immediately.
Well, when I get the episode and the thing wrong, I own that, Liam. I could, like, it's the first thing I'm saying. I could stop and start again. It would be very easy. It's not like we're 40 minutes into a podcast and I say something stupid. It's literally the first thing out of my mouth. But we'll just soldier through. We'll just push on.
You could have overdubbed it. Welcome back to episode 19.
It's 18, but that's either here or
there. Damn it. I demand that you now edit me over it going 18.
I'll edit me saying 18 from the start of the podcast over you saying 19.
This is going to be very confusing.
it's week 18 of the Wednesday Night Wars, and we are still talking about these wrestling shows. They're still going. They're still making these wrestling shows every Wednesday, Liam, which is honestly a slight surprise.
I really thought we would be done by now.
You thought this was like a 10-week commitment, and now you're just pot committed to NXT and AEW every week, and you have to come up with takes, and then there's like a boring match, and you're sitting there being like, I have to talk about this. I have to have an opinion about this match, in which really there's no opinion to be had about, and then it just rattles you, and you have to sit here and be like, well, what about that boring Jordan Devlin against Tyler Breeze match? Oh, let's come up with takes.
It's not even that. It's more so... I thought I'd be done by the time I had to go back to school. I had to work around the uni schedule.
You're part of this at 11:30 at night.
Yeah, what? But it takes a full day of me to watch 4 hours of wrestling.
It's 3 hours of wrestling. Well, actually, no, it's on Fight, so it's 3.5 hours of wrestling, I guess.
I guess.
Because it's the full 2 hours of All Elite Wrestling and 1:30 of NXT.
Yeah, you know what, that's perfectly acceptable then. Why was I complaining? It's a whole 30 minutes less.
It's, yeah, you can watch it on the bus. Some bus wrestling. Do you get a bus?
I won't get a bus. I live very close to my school.
But what excuse do you have? You can just walk to the class. You can watch it in class. It's fine. I'm sure your lecturer has one. Won't have any complaints.
I really hope that my Thursdays are just going to be free for the Thursday night wars.
As someone who did teaching assistant work at third level, The obnoxiousness with which people think they can look at their phone without you noticing is, like, staggering. It's like, what else would you be looking at under the table?
In year 12, I played Pokemon Crystal in its entirety in my math class by just putting my textbook up and then playing behind the textbook.
Liam, what's the square root of 145?
It's about 3.
What's the capital of Johto?
Did the Pokemon games have capital cities?
I was assumed it's like the last city is the capital city.
See, I would disagree. I'd say it's the biggest city. Well, that's the most true. Metropolitan, which would be... No, it's Cerulean's.
It's Goldenrod and Johto, I guess.
Yeah, Goldenrod is what I was thinking of, yeah.
And Blackthorn is very small, so I guess it's not Blackthorn City.
There you go. Or perhaps like in the later games in like Gen 5, it's those post-game areas, like the big city and the big like forest.
But yeah, those aren't cities.
Well, the city one is. It's literally a massive city.
It's like the most empty city in the history of Pokemon cities.
Just like most capital cities.
That's true. There's no character there. The capital cities aren't the characterful cities. They're just the big corporate ones, aren't they?
What's your favorite Pokemon city?
What is my favorite Pokemon city? I like Ekrateek a lot.
That's a solid shout. Because it's got so much content in that one city too.
Yeah, there's a lot of lore in Ekrateek.
I might go. Is it a cop out if I do the post game of Gen 3, like the Battle Frontier?
That's not a city, so yes.
It is a city.
It's just the bun. No, it's the Battle Frontier. Battle Frontier isn't a city.
It's basically a Battle Royale island.
It is, but it's not a city. It's basically a theme park. It's a large theme park.
I'm gonna go Slateport.
Solid. I do like the music.
Hmm.
It's also the first place you can do Pokemon contests.
Yeah, it's a hell of a time.
And you can, there's a little beach segment and you can get the lemonade.
Yeah.
That's a good time.
And you got the museum.
Yeah, and you turf out Team Aqua or Team Magma.
And like when you mess up doing the Reggie stuff, you get sent through again and you're like, oh, damn it.
It's good fun. I suppose we should talk about these wrestling shows.
I guess.
Welcome to Garrett and Liam's Pokemon podcast.
Yeah, this is our War Games podcast where we just compare each gen's games.
Last week, NXT picked up the victory, so we will kick off with NXT, which kicked off with the Broserweights coming to the ring in the Brosermobile, which...
This segment was stupid, and I loved it.
This segment made me realize what I don't like about NXT.
That it achieves nothing.
But like, there's just no personality in any of the rest of the show. And then you have Matt Riddle out there being like, how much fish could Bobby Fish fry if Bobby Fish could fry fish? Trying to get that started as a chant and just being the most charming doofus you could possibly have. It's like, oh, this show finally has a bit of personality.
Shocking that it's the one guy that's like not getting written for.
Yeah, it's the one guy that like, let's just let Matt Riddle be Matt Riddle. And Matt Riddle being Matt Riddle is better than everybody else in the show. Like, maybe Kyle O'Reilly? I think Kyle O'Reilly generally shows some personality.
Yeah, but he only gets to talk like once every 5 weeks.
Which, in fairness, this was one of those weeks.
I mean, yeah, but...
Like, it was driven home particularly when I was watching Killian Dane against Dominik Dijakovic. It's like, this is so dry. These two people are so dry. And when Matt Riddle is out there being like full of personality, and it's fun with him in the straight man thing with Pete Dunne. And the Broserweights, and Kyle O'Reilly just being an utter doofus. And it's like, oh, there can be personality on this show.
Yeah, it's hidden under many layers and layers of boring, I want to fight, but it's there.
Yeah, there's just something. There's way too many mean people being mean and gruff and angry, and not enough people coming out in custom golf carts with just a giant-ass trophy in the middle.
They should keep doing it and have them come out on the Bruiser Weight Mobile, was it?
Was it the Brosermobile, I think?
Brosermobile, yeah. They need to come out on that every week and they need to make it, like, customize it. So it has, like, lights under it.
Well, it had Pyro this week, which is pretty good.
That is pretty solid. They need to bring it out to Portland. NXT TakeOver Portland.
Next week, so this is the penultimate show before that takeover.
Portland.
What's with you in Portland?
It's just Portland. It's along the same lines of Mel. It's just Portland.
It's the Mel of cities.
Yeah, It's the Mill of Cities.
Riddle knows a thing or two about super, pause for effect, bowls, and he's a man-made Cloud Nine.
I actually laughed at man-made Cloud Nine. Do you get it? Do you understand it? He smokes marijuana.
Clouds.
And that creates clouds.
It's a reference to the WWE co-owned esports team, Cloud Nine.
Do they own an esports team?
They have a partial stake in Cloud Nine.
Well, do they play League of Legends by chance?
They do. That's the synergy we don't need. We'll talk about that later.
Grand synergy, baby.
Angel Garza defeated Isaiah Scott in a really enjoyable cruiserweight match.
While I was watching this match, I said to myself that Angel Garza might be my favorite wrestler in WWE.
And the thing, like, Angel Garza was never this good anywhere else.
No. To be fair, I don't think I saw much of him outside of NXT, but I assume that this is where he's found himself the best.
Yeah, because he was never bad, but he was never like, oh, this is a guy you'd hang a division on, and this is a guy you'd hang a division on.
I sent a tweet a couple of days ago, like, all the Lucha stuff is just the best part of WWE now.
Yes.
Like, when did you ever expect that to happen?
They should go all in. Just add Kalisto, add Metalik, add Lince Dorado, and just, like, make the US title, ironically, entirely a Lucha division.
Is this just all preparation for NXT Mexico?
Oh, God, it probably is. They have enough people at this stage.
Yeah, they'll just send Garza, Humberto, Andrade after he's done serving his sentence of being around Ric Flair. But, like, I was really bummed out that Zelina Vega didn't come out with Angel Garza.
There should have been... We talk about synergy. That is a lack of synergy.
I literally said to myself, brand synergy, while it was happening.
Especially because this was a brand synergy heavy show, because obviously they referenced what happened on Raw and we'd shared it later. So it's not like they're averse to brand synergy. But yeah, if you're going to establish that he's working under Zelina Vega's management, yeah, have her come out on NXT.
Yeah, why can't she? Like, she can be multiple brands. Like, this is what it should be. She isn't like restricted to one brand. She can go to any brand, and she just has like this whole stable of different luchadors on each show. That's how you could get like the Lucha House Party out of their rut.
And just like the J-Lo and Shakira halftime show, this promises to be En Fuego.
Yeah, he uses En Fuego a lot.
He does love En Fuego, and I don't get it.
But yeah, I really, really liked this match, because I really, really like Angel Garza.
Yeah, this was a good wrestling match. Much better than the other cruiserweight match on the show.
I was going to say, there's a lot of pants play in this one, so...
More matches should be built around pants.
I think every match should be built around pants, to be fair.
That's true.
Then we get a Garza promo? I didn't expect that. I feel like this is why Zelina should have been here.
Exactly, especially because this promo was, at least the first half of it, specifically related to him taking out Humberto Carrillo and Rey Mysterio before pivoting to Jordan Devlin. So is he basically going to be kind of splitting the difference and playing two different characters, doing like the feud with Jordan Devlin on NXT and WWE main roster, just ignore that while he does whatever they want on WWE main roster?
I thought about this because I was like, he's still a heel because he was a heel in this match.
Mm-hmm.
And Devlin's a heel, as we obviously saw later on. So mm-hmm. I just think they're going to chuck a third person in there.
Though Angel Garza flip-flops between babyface and heel at literally any given moment, so there's no possible way of knowing just where depends. He could be in a match against...
He's very much an Undisputed Era type scenario where it's like, if you like him, you like him.
I suppose. Speaking of Undisputed Era, they're on the search for Tommaso Ciampa, beating up people and shaving somebody's head.
This is stupid. Can we just go through this whole thing at once?
Yeah. Well, the worst part of it was them throwing Kushida in the bin.
Literally.
They literally threw Kushida in the bin.
And poor Jonah Rock didn't escape unscathed either.
Yeah. I was like, oh, so they're going to put Kushida in the main event and make it a name attack? No. Kushida doesn't get that.
See, I thought they were going to, like, this was all going to be them setting up, like, people that they piss off throughout the night, and then they were going to have a four-way at the end of the night. A 4v4. But nope.
These people are just nerds being beaten up by Undisputed Era on their search for Tommaso Ciampa, who's apparently a very difficult man to find.
Unless he wants to find you.
Wow. So yeah, he shaved a nerd's head, they threw Kushida in the bin, and eventually they brawled with Ciampa.
The Undisputed Era are just... They're frat boys, but they're all, like, in their early 30s.
Yes.
So it's, like, a bunch of, like, cool dads going around beating each other up.
They're not even in their early 30s. Strong is, what, 37, I want to say?
Yeah, you know you're not wrong, because Fish is, like, late 30s, too.
Yeah, Strong is 36, 37 this year, and Bobby Fish is, like, 45 at this stage, so...
So, literally just, like, late 30s frat boys is the...
Oh, God, Bobby Fish is 43. I said 45 exaggerating. He's literally 43.
Please stop these old dads.
These dads pretending to be okay boomers. This is the boomer stable, really.
Undisputed Era is a boomer stable, and they're meant to be like the up and coming guys.
Yeah.
Oh, that's ridiculous. This is like, I remember you in the Voices of Wrestling Slack mentioned like Aleister Black is meant to be like this cool, hip, up and coming star, and he's like 34.
Yeah, they're all 30. Like Ali is the next coming, as he's 33. Shawn Michaels was world champion like 6 times by then.
Yeah, the problem is they have no, like, they have a filtering in system, but they have no filtering out.
Yeah, so they're like AJ Styles and Miz and Cesaro and Sheamus and Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode and all these people who are 39. Like, we were having a conversation about who should have attacked Edge instead of Randy Orton, because you want a young guy there. But then the question is, who? And like someone suggested Finn Balor.
Ricochet.
Yeah, Ricochet. Well, Ricochet's a babyface, so we'd have to turn.
I was gonna say, like, Finn Balor's like 37.
Yeah, Finn Balor is only 2 years younger than Randy Orton. Randy's 39.
It's ridiculous, man.
Like, they're so old.
There's no sustainability here. Like, half of these people that we're talking about would be gone in any other era.
Keith Lee is a year older than Roman Reigns. It's like, what are we doing with this company?
It's going to be an interesting watch to see how this company implodes in the next decade.
Mm.
Like, I don't think they're never going to go, like, bankrupt, right? Like, they're too big to fail. They've got, like, Disney syndrome. But, like, there's going to be such an internal disruption that it's going to be very interesting to watch them break down.
Yeah, it's a slow and steady downhill climb.
Mm.
Which, led by the fact that literally everyone in that company is just old.
Yeah, and it's like, the only thing that we can see, like, you gotta say too, is like, AEW has to, like, resist the urge to pick up these people once they eventually do leave, because, like, then they'll just be the company that has all the 40-year-olds.
Yeah. And, like, well, Kenny's not that young, and the Bucks are in their, or, like, the thing is, all the main eventers are, like, roughly the age main eventers should be, like, early to mid-30s.
Mm.
Whereas WWE, their entire roster is early to mid-30s, pushing toward late-30s at this stage. And it's just like everybody up and down. When you look at Kofi, and Big E is in his mid-30s, and Big E is the future, but Big E's in his mid-30s already.
For me, like, the biggest one was always Balor. It's like, Balor, this next guy, he's going to be a top guy. And it's like, at the time, he was 36.
Yeah. Shinsuke Nakamura, he's a big even if they were pushing Shinsuke, he's 40.
Like Sammy,
Sammy and Kevin Owens both in their mid-30s, and they're like, they're the guy. It's like, these guys should be the guys right now, but they're all in their mid-30s in this kind of mid-card muck of nothingness, and they're all just hanging. Like War Machine, both in their mid-30s.
It's like, these are the guys who should be at the top of the card now, and your Randys and your, your Randys, your Rays and such, they should have moved on now. They should be in the twilight.
And it's funny, because if you look back at, like, WCW, and when Hogan and Piper were, like, I don't know, 43, and people were like, they're dinosaurs. These guys shouldn't be in the main event anymore. What's happening?
Not even just people. WWE say that.
Yes, they literally specifically called them out as being ancient old fogies who should not possibly be wrestling anymore. And now just look at the roster.
The old Vince that put Macho behind a goddamn commentary desk wouldn't stand for this.
Yeah, he did. And that was like, Macho still had a lot left in him. And he's just like, nah, you're done.
Like, imagine, like, that Vince seeing WWE today and just seeing, like, AJ Styles.
Yeah, AJ at 44, like, or is he
at 44 and his size. Like, he'd be like, what is happening to my company?
You see, it's the bizarre problem that Vince McMahon has been saddled with a bunch of wrestlers he does not believe in. So, like, when he looks at Ali, he's never going to push him the way you should push Ali, because he doesn't believe in him. But, like, that's everything he has. When Adam Cole comes up and he looks at how short Adam Cole is, he's just going to be like, I'm going to push you as an upper-mid character, but same as Seth Rollins. I'm never going to really get behind you because I don't really believe in you because you're short. And Vince has never pushed a short person past a certain level. And that just breaks everything. When you have literally everybody on the roster is like that, everybody now on the WWE roster is an indie darling that Vince probably secretly hates, and that's what he has to deal with.
Like, Cole's gonna have the same problem that, like, AJ had, where his ceiling is Edge.
Mm.
Which ain't a bad ceiling, but his ceiling is Edge.
Yeah. And that's the reason you get Baron Corbin and Roman Reigns all over SmackDown every week, because he doesn't like anybody else.
The A Show.
Where were we on the show?
Dominik Dijakovic versus Killian Dane.
Oh god, this match was so dry.
Yeah. What do you think of the North American title division becoming like the Hoss division?
I'd be okay with it if this match wasn't really, really boring.
Yeah.
The Beast of Belfast is the thing that goes bump in the night, and he wants to make it a bumpy night for Dijakovic.
So commentary announces that Dijakovic has announced has got a shot at Keith Lee.
If they do their same match at TakeOver, I'll be so mad. If they just do the same match they've done a million times on the indies and a million times on NXT with no escalation or elevation or, like, no evolution of what they're doing and nothing, like, building on those old matches or evolving those old matches or raising the stakes or an urgency of those old matches, I'll be so mad, Liam.
Yeah, I'm not excited for this. And I like Keith Lee, and I even like Dijakovic now. It took a minute, but I got there.
Why don't you like this, then?
Because I know what it's going to be. It's going to be them doing hurricane runners and going to the top rope and hitting a single Spanish fly off the top, and it'll be like, ugh.
There'll be a Canadian destroyer in there.
Yeah. I'm just sick of it, man. I'd rather, like, I don't know, Kushida and fucking Keith Lee. Why can't we do that?
Because Kushida's in the bin.
He is in the bin. Do you think he already, like, regrets his decision? Or do you think he likes America? Do you think it's like a Nakamura scenario where he's just like, ah, I like the country?
I don't know. Like that video where he's like, I don't get to spend time with my children because I'm wrestling in NXT. I'm like, oh, no. Is that your entire life now? That you just have to show up, you have to abandon your family to show up to Full Sail to be thrown in a bin? Remember, like, what happened to Trevor Lee? Where's Trevor Lee gone? Wasn't he feuding with Trevor Lee?
Nothing matters. It's all pointless. We're all gonna die and no one will remember a thing.
They had that entire thing over the hat, and then Kushida did that three-way feud.
Never got his revenge for the hat!
And it's just, they just disappeared off the show.
Ugh. What's next? I want to get off this bit.
Oh, we're on something I hate, my least favorite part of the show, which was the sit-down interview with Finn Balor and Johnny Gargano.
This was so bad!
It was the worst! God, the performances here were just...
I'm gonna stab this in your heart. I don't have a heart.
I'll drive the NXT flag through the heart that you left behind. Oh, the rehearsed canned lines and the phoniness of it all. And the delivery was awful. And, oh, God, this was just so bad.
And Finn Balor's scary faces into the camera.
Yeah, what? It's just...
He said that about me?
And Gargano shouting at him the whole time. It's just, it felt so phony.
It was so bad, man. This match sucks. What's next? God, I liked this show.
So did I. But now I'm just like, these things that back to, like, I was literally thinking before I Skype called you that, like, I actually don't know which show I preferred this week. I'll have to think about it as we discussed. Because I thought both were good, not great, solid wrestling shows. And I'm like, oh, where will I fall this week? But now, God, that Finn Balor, Johnny Gargano segment was the absolute dirt worst.
The Bobby Lashley line wasn't bad, though.
Yeah, there was one good line. It was the you lost 17. But even that's just burying shitty-ass Finn Balor. It's like, you lost 17 times. Why do you bring that up?
That was face Finn Balor. It's different. Guys.
It's raw Finn Balor versus NXT Finn Balor.
This is the prince. If they wanted to commit to the character, they would have called him Prince Devitt.
Mercedes Martinez squash Casey Catanzaro.
See, you know what? I actually really like this, and it's for one reason. This was a real squash on NXT.
Yeah, she just beat her. She beat her
we
ass.
We never get real squashes. We always get, like, way too long back and forth matches. But we never get, like, just beat them in 3 minutes, boom. And speaking of way too long, oh, that's shit. No, it's not that yet.
Yeah, we have the big ass brawl first, where they Undisputed Era finally find Master Ciampa backstage. Then
I hate this.
Hmm.
I hate this a lot.
The entire brawl, or just the finding backstage?
It's my least favorite NXT trope. Of let's all just go in the ring, beat each other up. Regal's gonna come out, 6-man main event. Because they do it like every 3 weeks.
You got a brawl after Regal announced the 6-man main event as well, Leo.
Ooh, what a differential. What a unique thing you've created. I hate it. I'm so sick of this. I feel like we get it every 2 weeks.
What? I was like, as I said, this show's pretty good.
Yeah, I like the show.
But now we're about to talk about Jordan Devlin and Tyler Breeze.
Let's start it positively, all right?
Okay.
The first 10 seconds of this was awesome.
I hated the first 10 seconds of this.
What?
For one very simple reason, that Jordan Devlin, for his entire career, draws comparisons to Finn Balor.
He did the dropkick.
And the first thing he does on NXT is the exact same dropkick off the apron spot that Finn Balor did last week.
I didn't even think about that.
This guy, for his entire career, has like an uphill struggle of being compared to Finn Balor. And he's on the same show as Finn Balor. And the first thing he does is the exact same thing Finn Balor does last week. And I'm like, if that's deliberate, what are you doing? If that's accidental, what are you doing? Who doesn't say, oh, Finn did that last week? Surely we shouldn't have the guy who, like, everyone will say is just a poor knockoff of Finn Balor until he has to earn it back. Do the exact same move. What are you doing?
I didn't even put two and two together.
Have I just ruined the one thing you liked about this match?
Yeah, like, jeez. Is Fandango dead?
Maybe. Remember when Fandango beat Chris Jericho at WrestleMania?
I do. It was in his debut.
Look where he's gone. And like Tyler Breeze, I was the same thing during this match. It's like, remember when Tyler Breeze was an actual player on this brand in like the Neville and Sami Zayn era?
I was legitimately thinking about the exact same thing while watching this match because the match was really boring. I was just like, I remember when he had long hair and was cool and was like an up-and-comer.
Yeah, he was an actual star on this brand instead of a guy having a boring-ass man. Jordan Devlin's theme music, by the way, absolutely atrocious.
It makes me think that he's a detective.
He does. It's like a noir show theme.
Yeah. And then I was like, didn't he have a PowerPoint gimmick? And I was like, wait, is his gimmick that he's a detective? Is that what it is?
Jordan Devlin won in a match that went through two commercial breaks.
All right. As a man who is, are you a fan? Me and you are both, you and I are both fans of puns.
Yes.
Devlin's side sucks.
It's pretty bad. Like when they were doing
the. It's way better in theory than it is practically.
It was when they were doing the video package for the David Starr match, the big David Starr match, and when they turned Devlin into Devil. It's like ooh, and now it's just like, all right, we get it.
I remember I saw the conversation on Twitter where he was asking for a name for it and someone was like, Devlin Side. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool because I was reading it. Mm. As soon as you try and say it, it's such like marbles in your mouth. It's not a comfortable thing to say.
Devlin.
And it's a dumb move.
Devlin Side. Especially because he can't hit it on anybody. It's like reasonably bigger than him.
Also like half the time he messes it up.
That's also true. God.
But like he did hit a great one against Star. I will admit that. No, it wasn't even that. He didn't even hit it. Star reversed it with the Swede takeover.
Yeah,
Devlin's side, baby.
Devlin won.
In 15 minutes.
Two commercial breaks. Ugh.
Why did this go this long?
I don't know.
The thing, like, it wouldn't have been that bad if Breeze was treated like anything more than he was on the main roster. But he's not. He's just an occasional tag guy who can win. But now he's going 15 minutes to the Cruiserweight champ.
His entire thing for the last like 3 months on NXT has been dressing up as a goof and losing as part of Breezango. And yeah, now he's the guy who goes 15 minutes. And maybe, who knows, he might be winning on 205 Live, but that's not a show that actually exists anymore.
I think he won once and just showed up the other time. So let's go to a segment that I actually had good things to say about.
Bianca Belair comes out first and cuts a promo being like, hey, Rhea, how dare you challenge Charlotte while you still have a match against me next week? Then Charlotte comes out and like, I am queen. Then Rhea Ripley comes out and like doesn't say anything. But the best moment is when Rhea Ripley comes out, Bianca Belair faces off at Rhea Ripley, and then Charlotte just puts her hand in her face. And Bianca Belair's indignance at that moment is so good.
She saved the segment. The segment was going to be really boring, and Bianca Belair just being in the background being herself is so fucking good.
As we go back to the thing I said at the start of the show, Liam, one person in this ring had personality, and that was Bianca Belair.
Thing is, though, like, I don't think Charlotte is supposed to have personality. I think that's meant to be her shtick.
Yeah, whereas Rhea's just kind of a robot.
Well, Rhea's meant to be, like, this rebellious chick, but she's not.
Rhea shouldn't talk.
She should just be a badass who comes in and beats the shit out of people.
Yeah, she should just never utter a word. By the way, were you the same coming out of this match being like, I'd prefer Charlotte against Bianca WrestleMania?
Yeah, I was 100% of it, like, about that too. And like, they did a good job of building Bianca in the Rumble for this too. Because you know, that Rumble was a tale of two stories. It was first half Bianca, second half Charlotte.
Yeah, Bianca was far, far, far and away the star of the segment.
Garrett, if you were to put a percentage on it, what percentage do you think of a chance is there that Bianca will face Charlotte at WrestleMania?
Zero.
But she should, though.
She should. Like, as I said, the match I came out of the segment wanting to see was Charlotte against Bianca Belair. And, like, Rhea's going to beat Bianca on next Saturday week. And then it's going to be Charlotte and Rhea. And, like, Charlotte and Rhea is probably, like, on paper, the bigger match. But Bianca's far more interesting than Rhea is.
I also, when Charlotte, like, palmed her off the second time, I was like, Bianca needs to hit her or she loses credibility. And then she did, and I was like, boom, this is a great segment.
Yeah. So yeah, get out of here, Rhea. We're done.
If Charlotte had just walked off and been like, I am Charlotte, blah, 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 I would have been like, this sucked. But because Bianca's like, nah, I'm not going to take it twice.
Yeah. Bianca. Hmm. Bianca. Push Bianca. Do something with Bianca.
I think she's like, she's just ready to be main roster. I think she's kind of stale in NXT.
Yeah, if you're not going to do Bianca and Charlotte, screw Shayna. Do Bianca against Becky.
Yeah. Speaking of...
Yeah, it brings us to our main event, in which the Broserweights and Tommaso Ciampa defeated the Undisputed Era by disqualification after Roderick Strong. Oh, it was the worst finish. I'm like, God, just have Adam Cole pin Pete Dunne, you know?
Well, Garrett, do you know that... We're going to do the bit that we planned, you remember?
Oh, yeah. Oh, all right.
3, 2...
Oh, God, I have to... No, I didn't take it down in my note. Oh, no, no, no. Okay.
All right. From the top. They'll never know. This is all going to be cut out, right? Like, they'll never notice. All right.
Seamless.
In. In. Garrett, you want to say it with me?
Yeah, you're never going to get through this quote. Oh, sorry, I don't have it in front of me because I didn't put it in my notepad for the show.
Would you like me to just say it?
Just say it.
In comes Adam Cole, an avid gamer who's also an expert in mind games. His savant-like mind for strategy has made him the leader of his League of Legends, the Undisputed Era.
The word avid gamer should never be uttered on a wrestling show.
The term gamer should never be used to describe someone who's cool.
Do you describe yourself as a gamer?
I do, and then I look at myself and I go, ugh.
I don't use game as like a verb or an adjective like that. I don't just like, I play video games a lot, but I'm like, am I a gamer? Like, people are like, oh, I game. It's like, no, that's no.
I don't say that, but like, I do. I think sometimes I do say like, oh yeah. I think I'm more likely to say I play games.
Yeah, but like the game, maybe it's just because the word gamer has been so utterly corrupted by the world.
Because it has been co-opted to no end.
That's not the first time Mauro said that quote, Liam.
Yeah, I remember, like, I didn't remember it happening, and then you reminded me, and I was like, oh wait, he has said that terrible quote before.
So he thinks that's so good it bears repeating.
Or do you think he's just like, oh no, they won't know. No one's paying attention to the quotes I say. I'll get away with saying it a second time.
Or maybe he's forgotten.
Maybe he is on a self-made cloud 9.
After the match, the Undisputed Era beat the heck out of Tommaso Ciampa, paint a big yellow X on his back before Velveteen Dream shows up, which, you know, he could have showed up like 5 minutes earlier before they beat the shit out of Ciampa.
That's a real dick move. But he doesn't like Ciampa. Remember, they feuded for the title.
I guess so. So
he did it for himself, not for Ciampa.
It's a little revenge. Yeah, he runs off the Undisputed Era, and Dream is back. But I assume that's not a takeover match, or at least takeover is six matches already. So I don't think there's room for a Strong against Dream.
There might be. Who knows? This is a new era. NXT is now a main roster brand. It can have 18 matches a show.
That's true. These shows need to be inflated with matches. That's the way main roster WWE works.
But Velveteen Dream is back, and I'm sure some people are excited.
That's Dream. He looked good in this, at least.
Yeah. He's I don't care, bro. What do you want from me? He has Roddy's wife and kid airbrushed on his butt. Who cares? It's actually his thigh, I think.
How much do you think he spends on that gear every year? Do you think WWE cover the bill for that gear?
Well, they don't. I remember always hearing that they don't cover it, but they cover it for some people. It's like some people negotiate for it, is what my understanding is. But I remember I was watching a Rob Van Dam DVD when I was in grade 7. And I think Rob Van Dam, because he also gets the spray, what is it called? Airbrushing on his stuff. And he was like, yeah, I get a ton of them and they're not very expensive. And I was like, oh, cool. So I imagine it's not that expensive to do. That's my long-winded explanation about airbrushing tights.
There you go.
Speaking of long-winded... Oh, sorry. I was trying to do your joke.
As I said, after this show, I'm like, you know, this show's pretty good. And after we've talked about this show, I'm like, you know, maybe it wasn't.
I think my problem with it, well, not even my problem, just how I watch NXT is I always like the first 40 minutes of it, and the rest of it I'm like, meh.
You just want it to end?
A little bit.
Oh, dearie, dearie me. That brings us to All the Wrestling Dynamite, which kicked off with Jon Moxley against Ortiz with Chris Jericho on commentary. This entire opening segment was a nice, tidy bit of business.
I sent you a message during that. I was like, this is a perfect TV match and opening. It told the story necessary. It put the star over as the actual star in the match, and it continued the story of the grander scheme of things. Jericho was great in this. Sammy was great in this, just like piping up every now and again.
He's getting the approval of his father.
Yeah, and Mox and Ortiz was perfect for what it should have been.
Yeah, it was a nice little 3-star television match in which Mox looked good. Ortiz didn't lose anything in defeat. And then the post-match where he stabs Santana in the eye with the car keys is such a perfect next step in that feud that sets up Santana having a meaningful match against Jon Moxley next week while also advancing Jon Moxley against Chris Jericho. This is good pro wrestling. This is good pro wrestling.
I also this is going to give ourselves this little glimpse of how would Santana play as maybe a single star along the line? You know what I mean?
There was a point when you asked me, will Santana be world champion someday? And my answer was definitely. Because I think I like Ortiz a lot, and Ortiz is much more charismatic than Santana. But Santana is the much better worker of the team. So him against Jon Moxley with stakes. There's a reason for that match to happen. It's an eye for an eye, Liam. These two one-eyed men will fight next week. I like when pro wrestling is good.
And the promo that he cut later on, I was listening to it, I was like, all right, someone's been listening to the Eddie Kingston promo style.
Yeah, and there's really not many better people to learn from.
Yeah, if you're going to emulate someone, emulate Eddie fucking Kingston.
Jesus, through SCU against Best Friends, they had a perfectly enjoyable little match. I thought the first half of the match was a little better than the second half of the match, but...
I kind of got sad when I saw the graphic for this match.
Yeah, SCU, I never really liked SCU, and they did a reasonable job of making them interesting in that initial tag team title tournament, and even Scorpio Sky interesting in his singles feud with Chris Jericho, but SCU as a whole, I'm just like, ugh.
I'm done with them.
I've never been into their shtick. Their shtick is just, it's never, ever interesting. Any of their the worst talents, ugh.
But, they don't even do that kind of stuff anymore. That's just more, catchphrase. It's I liked what they did with SU at the start because I felt like it was warranted. To that audience, they were oh, it's SU, we see him in all the clips, whatever. I liked that. They've reached to the top, they won the titles, We saw some glimpses of like, hey, maybe Scorpio could be some sort of an upper mid card sort of deal. Let's try that later on. But I'm done with them now. I'm sick of the tag team. I don't even like seeing them anymore, like, together. I'm ready for them to break up.
I guess like the reason they won here was just to give them a win before they get their tag title rematch.
I don't mind that at all. But it's just like, I'm sick of the team.
Yeah, it makes sense, but best friends should be the better pushed team in this division by a country mile.
Well, considering people, Trent is... There's like a weird thing with Dunno. It's like, they'll just get these sporadic big wins, and then there'll be no follow-up to it.
Mm.
And it's like, it really seemed like, well, you're going to push Trent. And now it's like, Trent and Shaggy are losing to SEU.
Yeah, because like, they have a really deep tag team division. They have lots of teams. But the problem is, like, they have one set of tag titles, which means there's usually only one, like, real tag team program going on at once. So, like you have Private Party, and you have the Hybrid 2, and you have Jurassic Express, and you have Best Friends, and you have SEU, and you have the Dark Order. All these people sitting underneath the top two teams, and the Lucha Bros to a lesser extent.
Butcher and the Blade.
Yeah, the Butcher and the Blade. All these teams that are kind of doing nothing, because, like, the Young Bucks against Kenny Omega and Hangman Page is probably the Revolution match. They could do the Lucha Bros, but that would be kind of dumb. But that's probably the pay-per-view match next week, which will be decided next week, sorry, with a battle royal. So everybody else underneath that is just kind of treading water, and they all feel thoroughly like they're treading water.
You know what the worst part is too? Like, as soon as that, like, is done, and the Bucks, I assume, win the belts, like, all right, well, now we got to start moving on to Bucks Revival. So all those teams, stay where you are.
Yeah. At least, like, get LAX doing something with Best Friends, you know? Give them a meaningful undercard program, not just having these matches.
Yeah. So, hopefully, like, what are the Lucha Brothers going to do on their road to Double or Nothing, Doubler?
Break them up. Or, well, not break them up, but have them do single stuff.
I mean, sure. But I think we've been saying that the whole time at this point. We're like, all right, ready, let's do some single stuff with Lucha Brothers.
But they're a team that you never need to heat up to do anything. Like, you can get Phoenix, you have a feud with Kenny Omega, go. And Phoenix is Phoenix, so it's fine. And same Pentagon, mm-hmm. You have a world title program with Jon Moxley, go. He's Pentagon, it's fine. Or if you want to just like, guys, we need to throw you back together for a tag team title feud. Again, you don't need to build that up because they're the Lucha Bros.
But I think I'm somewhat worried that perhaps AEW doesn't see them in the same light that we see them. Because we've been calling, like, Penta and Phoenix as, like, these... Oh, like, they're ready to be main eventers whenever you need them to be. But then they lose to Joey Janela.
That's true.
They lose to Trent. It's like, maybe we're the ones who are putting them on this pedestal, and they're not actually seen in that manner.
But, like, All In, one of the big matches was Kenny Omega and Pentagon. Like, these guys, when they're booking a show, their first show, they put Pentagon in an extraordinarily featured role.
So what I'm saying is, Doubler or Nothing, Jericho Pentagon should be the match. Non-title, because it's gonna be Mox Omega for the title, but on the undercard.
Or what if you do Mox and Pentagon?
I don't think that's your Doubler or Nothing match.
Probably isn't.
Because this is kind of skipping ahead, but when they did the rundowns of the announcements, mm-hmm. And they were showing the Double or Nothing stuff. I'm impressed with how quickly they've made Double or Nothing feel like a major event.
It was the first AEW show, you know?
Hmm. But, like, I see that, and as I was seeing the promo for it, I realized I got the same kind of ooh reaction that I get when Wrestle Kingdom's coming up.
Ooh. So yeah, you're a big fan of Vegas?
I don't know what it is, but I was like, I got that instant kind of, I don't know, adrenaline rush. Where I was like, yeah, it's the big show. So I guess Double or Nothing feels like the marquee show for me.
And hopefully we'll have a marquee main event. Do you think it's Mox and Omega?
I think it's Mox and Omega too.
You have a problem then, though, don't you?
Why?
Kenny probably shouldn't lose, and Mox certainly shouldn't lose in his first pay-per-view title defense. So who wins?
Well, the one thing you've forgotten, sir, is between pay-per-views there's 17 months. So we can do all kinds of wacky shit in the meantime.
Well, there's 3 months.
All right, then fuck it. Do Luke Harper and Kenny.
So yeah, like I would do, like, I think Mox should probably beat Chris Jericho. And I think Kenny should beat Mox at All Out. So I think you do Paige and Kenny at Double or Nothing. And then who do you do for Mox? Pentagon?
No, it's not going to be Pentagon. Stop pushing Pentagon.
You could do Jericho.
Code? Rematch, no, but I was going to say, how would Cody work?
It can't be Cody. Legally.
Is it
MJ?
MJF?
Oh, God. MJF main eventing a show? No.
Main eventing their marquee show of the year.
Yeah, I have things to say about MJF later. But
unless you get a big signing in the meantime, is Kazman gonna come for an AEW shot?
It's gonna be Marty. It's fine.
Oh. You know what I think match might happen on that show? Weirdly, I feel like there's gonna be a Brody Lee Park match. I just don't know why, but I feel like that's gonna be the direction eventually. Or maybe they'll be in the same group. Or I don't know.
I guess you could bring in Brody Lee on top to feud with Mox.
I think Brody Lee is going to slide into that Dark Order, unfortunately.
I was going to say your pay-per-views would then be main evented by Chris Jericho against Cody, two former WWE stars, then Chris Jericho against Jon Moxley, two former WWE stars, then Jon Moxley against Luke Harper or Brody Lee, which would be also two former WWE stars, so maybe you should start getting your all of the wrestling talent in there at some stage.
Which would be Kenny,
but as I said, that's probably all out. And I think Paige and Kenny is probably Double or Nothing.
To be fair, though, it's not like this is a bad problem to have. It's just an interesting, like, how are we going to get there? Also, like...
There's a very easy answer to that question. Pac.
I thought about Pac, but they've already given that way a match. They've given that match on TV twice.
It was on a boat. It's illegitimate.
But they also did it on TV before that.
Don't worry about it.
My thing would be there's always the chance that the Bucks main event against the FTR.
You still need a title match for Jon Moxley. Well, we're assuming Moxley wins. It could be Chris Jericho could retain.
If Jericho retains, do Jericho Pentagon.
Sure.
Do the Painmaker versus Pentagon death match. Jericho, that's what you need.
Revenge, finally, for Jericho dressing up as Pentagon at All In.
Yes, it's a full circle story. I'm just saying, I think there's a chance tag titles main event, and then you could do a smaller Mox defense against Pentagon or something. Could work.
Could do Darby?
I don't think Darby's ready. Oh, unless you do like a crazy stip.
But if you're doing like a Bucks main event, Darby's the perfect guy then to put in an undercard title match.
I just think with all this talk of, you know, we want to raise the tag division, blah, 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 you're going to have to main events and pay-per-views with the tag belts. They're going to have to, like, you have to give that perception. Like, you know, like, what was one of the big promise the Bucks gave us when the AEW was being talked about was the tag belts are going to mean some shit. Well, make them mean some shit. Put your money where your mouth is.
After SCU defeated Best Friends, the Dark Order attacked.
I like this Dark Order segment.
Then Orange Cassidy faced them down.
Yeah, rude.
Remember when we discussed the possibility of Orange Cassidy being the Exalted One?
Yeah, if I don't, unless this is all a big swerve. Oh, man, now I just want Brody Lee versus Orange Cassidy.
That would be a very... realistically, Orange Cassidy is probably the perfect guy to put the Dark Order against because it guarantees them a reaction.
As it got here.
Because Orange Cassidy is the most, like, literally one of the most popular guys in this company.
Well, it's what they said on commentary. Was like, he's the highest selling merch guy at the moment. I don't know how true that is, but I believe it.
They should probably start putting him in wrestling matches.
I don't think they know what to do.
But you could at least have him wrestle every so often.
Well, clearly, you should have his first match be a Double or Nothing. Double or Nothing.
Against Jon Moxley.
See, that's what I predicted was going to happen. I sent a tweet a long, long time ago that I thought he was just going to get wins in six-mans, like, over and over, and get his, like, record to be, like, 50-0, and then he was just going to get a title match.
They should do that. Daniels made the save. Dark Order backed off. They would not attack Daniels because they continued to recruit Daniels.
So Brandon Cutler was one of those guys that was the skinny guy under the mask, right?
I wasn't paying enough attention to the other people, but probably.
You need to pay attention to the goddamn Dark Order.
I'm not examining who the minions are to try and reveal their identity.
The Dark Order can save you from being sick.
They can. They aired another paid-for Dark Order little video later in the show being like, we can help you. You ask your doctor about the Dark Order.
Did you read the subtitles?
I did. It's like, this has no restorative properties.
The Elite will fall. It was just one of them. So, before we go into burying MJF, I do want to give this one MJF bit here. I liked it because we actually finally got like a little explanation of why he did his stuff. It should be in a bigger spot, but at least we got a little something.
Did we though?
Well, yeah.
You see, it's the same thing, though. He's like, Cody held me back. Cody wanted me to stay in his shadow. He wanted me to walk behind him. It's like, but what changed?
Like, you like, woke up when you realized he couldn't win the big one.
That, like, well, that, then say that. That's what I'm missing. That's the thing that I think this story is desperately missing. That actual why. Why did MJF kick Cody in the nuts at, whatchamacallit? What was the name of that show?
Full Gear.
Full Gear, there you go. Like, why did he turn on him? Like, what was the instigating factor that made him be his friend for multiple months and then turn on him in that instant? And we don't know. He hasn't explained it. They haven't filled in that gap. So I don't know why MJF hates Cody.
The annoying thing is, it's so simple. It's such a simple answer to the question, and they're just refusing to give it to us.
Mm.
Just say that I was his follower, I believed in him, and then I saw that he couldn't do it firsthand, and that caused me to turn. That's all you need.
Yeah, he's a failure, and I don't need to learn from a failure.
Yeah, maybe they're doing some like meta heel shit where they're like, him not explaining it is going to make people angry at him not explaining it, and thus will be heel heat.
I don't think that's how storytelling works.
That's because you believe everything you're told.
Like, I think they pulled the trigger too early on MJF, or on the turn anyway, and not really because like the story wasn't ready for him to turn. I don't think MJF was ready to have the training wheels taken off yet.
Yeah, they could have extended this forever.
Hmm.
Like, have him and Cody win the tag belts. Have Cody be the one to lose the tag belts. Which is actually probably going to be the Hangman Page Kenny thing anyway.
That's true. Kenny will probably lose the tag belts. He's like, I don't want anybody... We'll get to that in a second. We'll go to Dr. Britt Baker against Yuka Sakazawa. Or Sakazawa, I think was how J.R. went for it.
Sakazaki. Yeah. But it's all a bit. Michael Jacob Friedman.
And there was a period during the, well, when the Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny were making their entrance where J.R. was like, well, not even I can misidentify the bunny. It's like,
sick brag. Prince Wright, you don't know the names.
Sakazaki won before Britt Baker attacked her after the match and then gave her a curb stomp into the ropes, which knocked her teeth out and applied the lockjaw.
That's a cool spot, but it's like, how dare you disrespect the Will Ospreay Jimmy Havoc feud in this way?
That's true. And Britt Baker, I feel bad ragging on Britt Baker, but she was not good in this wrestling match.
Yeah, and she didn't even have a great promo like last week to save her in that case either.
God, she took a snapmare at one stage, and she took it in a way that, like, if I'd kick somebody in the first week of wrestling school, I think, for taking that snapmare.
Yeah.
And she did cut a promo during the break on Fight, which was not particularly good.
Why did this ghost, like, this whole segment, like, with this and the post-match, felt like it went way too long.
What are they setting up Britt for?
Who's going to be the big Sheeta? Like, is that going to be who comes to defense and beats Britt?
Maybe, because, like, we have Nyla Rose against Riho next week. So even if Riho retains, which I think Riho should retain.
Alternatively, is Britt Baker versus Riho the doubler or nothing match?
But, like, they've already done it, and Riho won. And fair enough, they've turned Britt. So Britt will be, like, different going into that match. So there'll at least, like, be... There'll be a next step to that story, at the very least. But, yeah.
Maybe we'll have some, like, dental hygiene-themed match.
Or maybe Nyla Rose will just win the title.
I wouldn't mind it, honestly.
But I don't think she's ready.
I mean, yeah, but I also wouldn't mind it. Like, I'm indifferent to that title change. Either way, I could see positives.
Mm.
Yeah, this post-match thing kind of stunk. It just went too long, and no one cared, so, like...
Were you upset about the theme song?
A little bit. If I'm being honest, a little bit, yes.
Well, they played it when she won.
Yeah, exactly. That's what annoyed me. Why did they play it when she won?
Do you think they hit the wrong button?
Is it the chance that they went straight to commercial right after she won so they could play it on the Fight feed only?
Mm. Well, like, in theory, if they have, like, a giant playlist of theme songs that they just hit the right one,
maybe they had... Yuka Sakazaki 1, Yuka Sakazaki 2.
Yeah, so they had two Yuka Sakazaki ones in there and they hit the wrong one on the entrance? It could have been that. I don't know.
Let's or go maybe... to something that I... Oh, sorry, you still going?
I was going to say, maybe they want to make it meaningful by only playing it when she wins.
Ah, it's a real Mankind scenario.
Indeed.
Like, I get why they did this with her, because, like, she's the sweetest, and, like, it's really upsetting to see someone brutally rip out her teeth. Like, I feel like you need more than 1 week's build. Like, not even 1 week's, like, a day's build for this to work.
I did enjoy when she did the dive. Jiro was like, ah, yes, the magic girl dive.
Yes, so different to the regular dive.
The Lucha Bros, Butcher and the Blade defeated the Elite after Hangman Page refused to tag in the Young Bucks and then got his ass beat.
This is sick.
Yeah, really good, enjoyable, just great. I think it's an Elite eight-man tag with good storytelling undertones there. What more do you want?
I was going to say, I didn't want this to just be like, oh, Elite Multi-Man, it was great. But it was like, Elite Multi-Man, it was great, and it told a fucking great story.
Yeah, where Kenny and the Bucks are pals and tagging in and out and having fun. And Hangman, I'm torn on the entrance, because I think what they did was fine, where Hangman strolled out far and away ahead of them. But I also don't really like that Hangman came out to the Being the Elite theme.
Well, he said that. Did you not read the subtext, Garrett? That was on the screen.
What was the subtext on the screen?
It literally said Hangman was not happy about the choice of the music.
It's the worst theme song, and like being the Elite theme song is fine. It's not an entrance theme in pro wrestling. It just does not work. It's absolutely atrocious.
I didn't mind it when they used it as like a little intro thing, and then it went into like Kenny's theme. Like in New Japan, they did that a couple times. But it's like outside of that, come on, guys. I know it's your dad's music, but
it doesn't work. It does, like, it's fine for the internet show. It's a fine little song for that intro. It doesn't work as wrestling music. It's really bad as wrestling music.
Like, Tony needs to just go to him and be like, hey, man, I know he's your dad, but...
200,000 people watch Being the Lead every week. Plenty of people see the song. It's fine. You don't need to put it on the television show.
What are your thoughts on them getting the custom, like, Titantron?
Sure. I don't know. I like the Bucks gear.
Bucks gear was nice in this match. Kenny, like, for a man who likes to change up his gear all the time, he is not changing up his gear all the time.
I do like that he has his Rio gear, which he wore on Dark.
Ah, that gear rules.
It does rule.
That should be the gear he wins the title with.
So yeah, this was a really enjoyable match where Paige was kind of operating separate. I also like the touch that Paige is perfectly fine tagging in Kenny because he's his tag team partner, but he doesn't want to tag in the Bucks.
See, I also like that there's a real, like, sub-story here where you think, like, it's meant to be presented as, like, oh, yeah, Hangman's this dick who doesn't want to participate. But, like, if you really read into it, like, the Bucks are the ones being the dicks in this scenario.
Or the dicks are the people who you want to be the dicks.
Mm.
People who like the Bucks and be like, Paige is being very standoffish to my close friends, personal friends of the Young Bucks. But you can also, as I said, the subtext of the story is also the Young Bucks stepped on their moment winning the tag titles, and the Young Bucks stepped on their moment backstage while they were being interviewed after winning the tag titles, and the Bucks just won't leave Hangman Page alone.
Yeah, the Bucks won't leave him alone. They're constantly judging him. Hangman has gone up to them multiple times and said, hey, I'm trying to distance myself, and they like, we know that they're the Bookers. It's like, they know that they keep doing this to him. They keep thrusting him back into their group.
Poor Paige. He just wants to stand on his own two legs. I do want...
Don't blame him.
I don't want them to turn Hangman Page, because I think he's... like, when he got tagged in, the crowd went absolutely nuts.
Yeah, but that's not your story that you tell. Like, you tell the story of him trying, like, proving himself against the Elite, but not, like, being, like, oh, I am bad and I hate them.
Yeah, so whenever they wrestle Kenny, like, that match has to end in a hug. Like, because Kenny's probably winning. And then a mutual respect hug, you know, make up with the Young Bucks, handshake, everyone's happy. But, like, I would be very displeased if they actually turned Hangman Page. I think that would be foolish.
I think the problem with, like, this company is, like, for as long as Hangman is in the company, he's always going to be like, Elite stuff. Like, it's in the name of the goddamn company. Mm. It's all Elite, you know what I mean? There's always going to be, like, that weird, why aren't they, like, I don't know. I think it's going to be a real hurdle for him to get over.
Pet peeve with JR. He's like, will they be able to stay on the same page this week? And the key to that is Hangman. His name is Page. It was right there.
Thanks, Maro.
Maro would have done a real good Maro quote, in fairness.
And then we got a... I haven't really liked a lot of the Park stuff with Omega, but I like this one.
Where he's
it went on a little long, though.
I was like, is he really going to put Rio through that table? It's like, no, he had someone to put Rio through the table for him.
Also, whoever directed this shot did a bad job because they showed Rio at the start and then went into Park's face. Should have been on Park, panned out to reveal that Rio was there, but whatever.
You should be directing the pre-tapes.
I will do it. I will sell out in a second.
That sets up Kenny Omega against Park in a 30-minute Ironman match in 3 weeks.
That's got to be cool.
3 weeks is that the go-home or the week before the go-home? One, two, three. Yeah, that's the go-home. So that's the go-home for Revolution. They'll have that 30-minute
Ironman. That's your go-home main event, I assume.
Or Paige is very displeased that he's focusing on having a 30-minute Ironman match against Park rather than their tag team title match against the Young Bucks at the pay-per-view.
I guess I kind of assumed that this was going to be the pay-per-view match, but I shouldn't have.
Well, yeah, I always thought it was a bump on the road to the pay-per-view match, so there you go. I was right.
Well, there's your story, though. Like, Park wears out Omega so much that Omega takes the fall against the Bucks and pisses Paige off.
Mm. There you go. Storytelling. This feels great.
Bring us on. We know what we're doing. Any company. Doesn't need to be AEW. We'll take a job.
Nyla powerbombed Rio through a table, but the table did not break, and she just bounced off the table. It looked very unpleasant.
To be fair, whenever that happens, those bumps always look worse than just going through them.
Yes, the table breaks the fall. Bouncing off the table onto the floor sucks.
Darby Allin has a flamethrower.
Oh, I have one more thing about this match.
Oh.
There was two separate periods where Hangman Page and Nick Jackson did dives. And the commentary both times were like, oh, whoa, they tweaked their knee, It's like, what are you doing?
See, I was thinking that too. I was like, if you know that that's like the story they're going to tell, then yeah, bring it up. But otherwise,
yeah, it's like, well, it's not the story. Why are you telling a story that they're not telling? Stop it.
It's almost like commentary is one of the biggest problems on this show.
It's a problem on both of these shows.
I need Britt to come out and like bury Mauro next week.
Should do a Mauro quote.
That would rule.
Yes, Darby Allin, flamethrower, burning Sammy Guevara and Chris Jericho, or at least cardboard cutouts of them.
And now he's going to do it. He's going to end out. There we go. Double or nothing Jericho Darby Inferno match. Clearly, this is the setup.
I'd be into it. Why not?
Darby should do an Inferno match.
That's got race.
Hey, Garrett, did you know that Penelope Ford has blue eyes?
That was so weird and uncomfortable.
Isn't that nuts? She has blue eyes.
JR is just like on commentary, and I just noticed Penelope Ford has blue eyes. It's like, what?
JR just like had his woman crush Wednesday moment in the middle of the show.
Yeah, Kip Sabian defeated Joey Janela, and this undercard is so boring. Like, and you have Brandon Cutler there, and Sean Spears there, and like Sonny Kiss isn't really doing anything.
All right, whoa. Say what you want about everyone else. Sean Spears on Dark last week was good.
I have not watched the main event. Sean Spears should just be a nerd. He's fine. He's a nerd.
He is a nerd. He's a nerd on Dark now.
I suppose
he's never even on Dynamite.
All these people should be nerds. But Kip Sabian should be a nerd on Dark as well. So should Joey Janela, to be honest.
Where's Jimmy Havoc?
They're all nerds. The worst part of AEW is that undercard singles division. It's just, there's nothing there. It's just the worst.
That's why they put, they gave Spears a comedy tag gimmick, and it's good. So say what you want about everyone else. I will defend Spears at the moment.
Anytime any of these people are on Dynamite, they're always the worst part of the show.
Yeah. Especially when they get 11 minutes.
Yeah, Kip Sabian won.
Can we stop with the Kip Sabian experiment?
Can we stop with all of these people? Like, Joey Janela is very good in the specific environment of GCW, but he's been a bit of a flop on AEW television.
I feel like we say this every week.
Yeah, it's just, but he's still on TV and he's still not good, and it's just,
see, like, that's the thing. Like, I, out of all these people, I want to believe in Janela the most, though.
Yeah.
So like, I'm grasping. I'm like, come on, you can do it. I know you can pull through to the other side of this.
But like, he had feuds with John Moxley and Kenny Omega, so it's not like he's been just been saddled with the nerds.
To be fair, he was the third piece in a feud between John Moxley and Kenny Omega, and those things were good.
Jericho was very upset. I liked Jericho. I was like, how dare you try to take another man's eye out?
I liked him telling Marvez to shut his ass.
Yeah. Jericho's good. This stable's good. good things again. I'm happy again after that. Having to think about Kip Sabian.
The Buck segment was also good.
Yeah, the Ariel Page, take the beer.
And then he had a bigger beer.
Yes, he did have a bigger beer. He had a pitcher of beer ready for him to chug down.
We're ready for news?
Next week, the World Tag Team Title rematch will be Hangman Page and Kenny Omega against SCU. John Moxley will face Santana in an eye versus eye, or an eye for an eye match is what they specifically call it.
What does that mean?
I believe it's just branding.
The loser loses the other eye.
Yes, one of these people will walk out without an eyeball. That's what they've advertised. Rio will defend the AEW Women's Championship against Nyla Rose in 2 weeks. We have a tag team battle royal for the title shot at the pay-per-view. And Cody Rhodes against Wardlow.
Sorry, Mr. Mayhem.
In a steel cage match. And then in 3 weeks, we have Kenny Omega against Pac in a 30-minute Iron Man match.
Jesus.
Which brings us to our main event segment, which I still haven't worked out how I feel about it, so I'm going to let you go first. Cody gets whipped.
I liked it. I thought it was, like, 3 minutes too long.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, at the end of the day, it got the desired reaction, I feel. Everyone's like, Cody, Cody can do no wrong at this point, you know what I mean? Like, he got whipped a bunch, we all feel sorry for him, and now we want Cody to kick MJF's ass. And I think that's what they wanted. So, yeah.
It's what we wanted, what we got. I didn't go on inspecting it, but sorry.
I'm going to keep talking over you every time you try to speak.
I'm more or less the same. I think Cody was tremendous here in trying to make every single one of those lashes meaningful. I think he oversold some of them because, like, being slapped on the back with a belt hurts, but I don't think it would buckle you to your knees and
sorry,
make you...
what? How many times has this happened to you?
Have you never been hit with a belt by anybody in your life?
Not on my back.
Can you at least not imagine being whipped in the back with a belt?
Yeah.
I'm saying it would sting a lot, but I'm not sure you'd be like on your knees, unable to stand. You know?
I think I could crumple you with a shot to your back.
Challenge accepted.
I can guarantee I could make you like drop to your knees by hitting you in the back with a belt.
Could you though?
Yes.
I still don't think you wouldn't be able to stand.
I mean, yeah, that was cold selling.
Yeah, but the only one of the shots that I bought that buckled to his knees was Wardlow's. So he should have saved the buckle to the knees one for Wardlow.
You know the one thing that did kind of bum me out of a segment?
What?
The last one kind of sucked.
The last one did. Someone made the point that maybe he whipped him on the dream. Which, if he did, that's a great touch that maybe perhaps should have been pointed out on commentary.
Should have whipped him in the face.
It looked pretty bad. Or just whip him in the back
again. Hey, be a man. Take it to the face.
Get Wardlow to do it again, because Wardlow's one looked great. And MJF's,
I had a real, like, rollercoaster of emotions, too. Because I was like, it's MJF, he's a dick. Obviously, he's just going to keep hitting him after the 10th one. And I was like, oh, he didn't do it. But then they had, like, Cody fighting back. I was like, yeah, that rules. And then he kicked him in the nuts. And I was like, all right, I got the best of everything.
It was the Hannah Montana, if you will.
So, the best of both worlds?
Yeah.
Are you excited for the prequel?
They're making a Hannah Montana prequel?
Apparently so.
Oh, no. Does it
have... I don't know how she became the best of both worlds.
Wasn't that already covered in the show?
I'm pretty sure the show started with her just being a celebrity.
All right, I didn't watch enough of it.
I watched a shit ton of Hannah Montana, I will admit.
I watch most Disney Channel shows. I watch, like, because, like, they're on all the time.
Did you watch Sweet Life of Zack
yes,
and Cody?
And Sweet Life on Deck. I've seen most episodes of both of those shows.
What's your favorite, like, mid-2000s to, like, 2010s Disney show?
I like Good Luck Charlie. I thought that show was charming.
Good Luck Charlie was fun.
Yeah.
I was a big That's So Raven fan.
Did you watch the sequel?
I haven't. I've seen like one episode, and I was like, "That's kind of cool," but that's about it.
Yeah, it's like people really wanted their That's So Raven return.
I did. I saw the episode. Oh, That's So Raven 2. Spoilers, guys. the scene where her son admitted that he could also see the future. I was really into that.
Did she finally be like, don't intervene in the future. The future that you intervene with is the future you create, which she never worked out in the television show. How did she never work that out?
She just kind of cried. I was like, oh, I love you. And I was like, She loves you.
But what are we talking about? Raven? Cody?
Wardlow. Raven? Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
Raven should be the exalted one.
That would actually though.
Yeah, like legit.
That would rule. It's going to be Matt Hardy, guys.
But Cody's performance was real good. He reminded me. I thought it would get more heat. I thought people would rally behind Cody a little more. I thought MJF, a fan did jump MJF, so maybe.
I didn't know if that was real or not.
If it wasn't, that's a very good touch.
I actually thought it was Darby. I just saw a dude in like cut off shorts. I was like, oh, Darby jumped him.
It's defending his close personal friend Cody.
But I did like, there was like a touch where like fan Gardesha Max jumps MJF and then like they cut back to it and Wardlow's gone and the fan's gone and I was like, oh, that dude's getting the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, that fan did not have a good time.
They should have just cut to behind the curtain and Wardlow's just legitimately beating the fuck out of the fan.
I like Brandy coming out a lot because people will be like, oh, but she's the Nightmare. Who cares about the Nightmare Collective? I think
the Nightmare Collective's done. That's done. Let's go. We're done.
But her coming out here like added weight to this segment because like she's abandoned her Nightmare Collective nonsense to support her husband.
Also, like, it's not like she went out there and was like crying and saying stop doing it. She went out there and told him to get up and take the last one.
Yeah, be a man.
Like Nightmare Collective Brandy would say that. So regardless,
yeah.
if you say like she didn't, to me it didn't even seem like she broke out of the Nightmare Collective like character because she went out there and she told him to stand up like a man and take the last one,
which he did. The last one sucked, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it just didn't make a sound. It probably hurt the most, to be honest.
And if you saw the picture of his back, it looks unpleasant. On the whole, I thought this was a good segment. There we go. I've worked it out.
One show you came around on, one show you went away from.
That's match of the week first.
I got a little tie. I got to work out which one I prefer.
I would probably go with the Elite Eight Man tag.
Well, then I'll go with Garza and Scott.
There you go. Well, you can pick the same one. You don't have
Okay. Nope. I'm picking Garza and Scott.
Which show did you prefer, Liam, between All Elite Wrestling Dynamite and WWE NXT?
It was much closer when I just finished NXT. But now it was Dynamite.
As I will always say, good art, good content holds a better to greater scrutiny. People are like, oh, you picked it apart, you nitpicked it apart. If stuff is really good, like the Hangman Page and Kenny Omega stuff, the more you dig into that, the more you get out of it, the more nuance there is. So it's really, really good. And people will be like, oh, well, you shouldn't nitpick NXT like that. It's like, if there is those nitpicks to be had, then it doesn't hold up. I'm sorry. And I'm the same. Like, when I finished these shows, I was like, I don't know which show I preferred. And then running through them, I'm like, oh, God, I very much know which show I preferred. AEW. And our fan poll agrees, 80-20 All Elite Wrestling. Which, again, I think is an all-time record for the difference between the two shows.
Suck it.
Before we go, Liam, where can people find you on the interwebs?
I don't know why you asked this. I never give the answer. And then you just tell them for me.
Well, the last couple of weeks, I haven't asked you. I just went straight into plugs. I've just steamrolled right over and said you can find him at Larrick, and you can find me at Garrick, and you can find the podcast at War Games Pod, where you can vote in the poll every week. But where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me in the Voices of Wrestling Discord, in the hashtag Wednesday-WarGames sub-discord...
Thread?
Thread? I don't know what they're called.
They're called threads on Slack, so let's just go with it.
You can catch us in the Voices of Wrestling Slack.
Listen, John listens to the show, so they can find us there. And there's like 50 people in the Voices of Wrestling Slack. So,
hell yeah.
You can listen to Everything Elite.
For Mel,
more.
Yeah.
Mel, yeah. Mel wasn't on. Oh, yeah, I was very upset because Brandy came out to support Cody, but Mel didn't come out to support Cody.
Did you watch the Mel segment from Dark?
I did. They beat up Awesome Kong.
Yeah, Awesome Kong's like done, right?
I'd imagine that's a write-off, yeah.
But like, okay, trust me, as much as I support any Mel push, like, you have her lose and then do that?
It doesn't make much sense, no.
Like, you couldn't have Mel win a squash and then beat up Kong's like, I am the dominant one of the collective?
She couldn't have just squashed Leva Bates.
Just boom, squash Leva Bates, double fingers up, Mel, yeah, get out of there.
So I suppose you could argue maybe she attacked Awesome Kong out of frustration for her defeat.
Well, Mel.
There you go.
Well, Mel.
That's it. you didn't have anything to say after you just said Mel? Okay.
I was trying really hard to think of a Mel pun, but I couldn't think of a new one, so. I couldn't Mel liver.
You're getting very melodramatic.
Nah, it's way better than mine.
If you would like more All Elite Wrestling coverage in your podcast feed, you can listen to Everything Elite, or you can listen to Shake Them Ropes for coverage of pretty much every wrestling television show, I think, at this stage.
No, sorry, keep going.
Why did you say wait?
Don't worry about it.
Thanks for listening, and bye-bye.
Wait, if Mel were to work in a prominent pro wrestling venue, she would work in the Melrose Ballroom.
Pod's got over. See you next week.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.